What's up, Jay Snyder? Coming in hot off the road, partying hard and living the life of a comedian.
Oh, living the life of a fucking tiger blood.
Yeah, you got
tiger blood. Charlie Sheen.
What'd you end up doing last night? I left you last night at the New Chapter after the show. You had a great set in a relatively hostile room. And I don't mean hostile in terms of like people wanted to fight, but you had to fight for the laughs, yeah. That's for sure.
Oh, it was work, yeah, but it was a short set, and I was like, yeah, fuck it. There's, you know, Ben's trivia for a few, hung out there for a little bit. Really, it was just a pretty laid-back night. And that took it way easier than what I normally do.
Yeah, but, I could tell when I left that you were still coherent, and that was a good thing.
Yeah, and that was hours.
Yeah.
After I shit lived in.
Yeah, there was time to get it in.
Yeah, I was feeling rough from the night before, but no, it was a good little hangout over one at Jack's. Took it easy. Went back. My best good friend hooked me up with a free hotel, so I just took it easy there and headed back down to Jackson earlier this morning.
What do you got going on the rest of this week?
The rest of this week I got a show that's kind of teetering back and forth on down in Galveston for Friday, and then I'm with Donnie Baker Saturday in Batesville, Indiana.
Donnie Baker. Damn, tell me about this show that you got coming up with him. So, Crash the Website?
Yeah, the one in Chillicothe, yeah, so it's a 500-seat theater that went on sale, and, you know, Lori Graves does the shit right, so she was promoting it before they went on sale like crazy, and so they went on sale at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, and at 10:03 it was sold out, but the website crashed. That's 500, I mean, that's crazy. So then I thought the second one was sold out too, but I thought she posted something today that there's 38 tickets left for that one, so it'll be sold out, but, you know, probably by Friday.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
That's hot fire, man. Yeah, I just got back. I just got back off the road with Steve Seibos.
Steve
Seibos. It's always interesting with Steve, in that I know he doesn't listen to the cast, so there's no problems there. He has these. He has this way of talking where he says things like, here's something I don't understand, or maybe you can explain this to me. But really, it wouldn't matter if he was like, maybe you can explain this to me. People are telling me that 2 + 2 = 5. And I'd be like, no, it clearly equals 4. And he'd be like, maybe. But it's one of those things where it's like, I'm the dummy for answering the questions 9 out of 10 times, because I don't think he wants an answer. I think he just wants to argue or debate the subject.
So it's just for argument's sake.
It's just to hear himself sound right, I think, because even when he makes an argument and I'm like, well, yeah, but here's a situation where that's not true, he'll say like, well, yeah, I mean, if you're going to take everything I say literally, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, because if you're using exaggeration to make your point, are you really making your point?
Right.
And so
is that pretty often?
Oh, I would say it's anywhere from 4 to 5 times an hour. And that's us spending every minute together, basically. I mean, there was times when I would go out in the car and listen to a podcast or just listen to some music for an hour or two just to have some time to myself.
Right.
And I've never done that when we've been on road trips with us, but it's exhausting. But it's also one of those things where it's like, it could be worse. He could not talk at all. And I just as soon be talking, but, I come from a school of thought of where, like, I don't want to argue and I don't want to, judge people. You know what I mean? Like, I'll judge people, like, I'll judge a comic, you know, if they're asking me, do you think this is funny? And I'll make a judgment on that. But the level to which he judges people he's never met or doesn't know, as a way of, like, not understanding it. Like, I don't understand how this works. And I'm like, I don't even try to understand that. Like, I don't even understand how you have enough energy to think about some of the things that you think about. Because I'm just trying to, like, get through each day, not worry about the Women's March or what so-and-so says about the president. And I think that's really what it was, is that he's like a liberal, but I don't think he supported Hillary. And so he's one of those, he's one of those weirdos, not weirdos, but one of those weird anomalies where, you know, people are like, well, I'm for gun control, I'm for, you know, blah, 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 but I'm not for her. And that's a, that's a slippery slope.
See, I'm the opposite. I like to judge people. I'll judge a fucking cripple. I don't give a shit.
I'm not saying I don't do it. I think I've just tried to stop myself when I see myself doing it, because I think that in many cases we judge others to make ourselves feel better or to improve our own standing in our own mind. It's like a rationalization.
Oh, hell yes.
So I try to make myself feel as shitty as possible most of the time. And that's how I keep from judging folks. But I was just looking up this rhetorical arguments and stuff. So I'm gonna be well versed in these rhetorical arguments, because we got another. So like this road trip to South Dakota, it's like I'm not just bitching, because we had a great time. We had some great conversations, like talking about UFC, talking about things that aren't controversial are always fun with him.
Right.
But there's certain things that it's like, he acts like he's willing to have he has an open mind about it, but I don't think it's so open. But the problem is that we're driving for 13 hours to get to the spot and then 15 hours back. So it's like, if something doesn't get resolved, it just sits out there for a minute. But he doesn't really hold a grudge, and I mean, he could kick me off of shows, and to be honest, I can't believe he likes traveling with me, because I'm not argumentative, but I'm not the type of person to just sit back and...
Yeah, you're not passive either.
Right. But lately I have been. Lately when he gets on these rants or whatever, I just let it go and I don't even comment. And I listened to this in this book on tape from like this book from the 20s or whatever. But Dale Carnegie, I think, was the author. And he said... you know, instead of arguing with somebody or asserting your point over their point, the easiest thing to do is to just say, yeah, if I were you, I'd feel the same way, you know, from where you're standing, I think I'd have that same opinion. And that's really easy to do. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm just so sick of this arguing that we see on Facebook, which is why I deleted the app. I barely am on there. I still check in a little bit if I get a message, but if I go 2 days without being on Facebook, I call that a success.
Yeah, you actually start feeling better.
Yeah,
my sister-in-law broke her phone, and she'd go get one, but she's like a couple weeks out from getting the upgrade anyway, so she's just kind of like, get the hell with it.
Right.
And she said at first, you know, the first day or two, it was rough, because she's used to being on Facebook and all that other good stuff, and now she's like, I feel great. It's the best thing ever. My stress is down, and you know, because Facebook, it's all negative.
It's not all negative. That's like something I would say with Steve, like where he'd be like, it's all negative, and I'd be like, well, it's not all negative. It's just hard to fish out the positive because it's overwhelmingly negative. You know what I mean?
And yeah,
it's
like,
unless you really sit down and just start unfollowing folks. You know.
Oh, that's the greatest. That is the greatest. I've added several years to my life in the last year, just unfollowing and blocking people.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really nice tool, and it's also one of those things where it's almost like if you overuse it, you kind of defeat the whole purpose of Facebook. But
right. There
are certain seasons. So what I do is I try to make sure as I go back and I revisit the unfollow list. And what I found is, there's people that I have unfollowed multiple times because I'm like, oh, they're better, you know? And then I'm like, no, they're not.
Right. But see, that's the thing. I never just unfollowed, which I have went through and blocked a handful of people in the last couple of weeks. And then I normally don't just block them, I'll just unfollow them. everybody else and let them know what's going on and shit like that. And so I was just like, fuck it. So I'll just block them and then be done with it. And we can move on from there.
But, yeah, I kind of feel like I could delete my account because I can honestly say at this point, I'm not getting... I mean, like, I get messages for gigs occasionally, but I feel like if I gave those people my phone number, I'd still get the gig. You know what I mean? There's like one guy in the last year that's gotten me maybe 3 gigs off of a Facebook message, and I have to say that all of those gigs were unpaid. So it's not like I was missing out on a lot. And it's not like I wasn't thankful to do the gigs, because I was, but I think it's one of those things where... you know, I think we thought we had to have these things, and now I'm starting to realize, like, and I still use Instagram, and I like Facebook Messenger. It's not a, that's not a bad app. I don't need to know what's going on, you know, in people's lives that I haven't seen in 20 years. I just don't need to know that.
Right. Yeah, I guess, most of the people that I get booked through, occasionally here and there will be a new comedian that, that'll offer me a gig or whatever, but for the most part, anybody that offers me a gig on Facebook has my number anyway.
Right.
And so, I would say not a shitload of gigs, but more than I want to lose from not having it.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, there was a girl who went up for the first time last night. She did all right. Well, you think? Especially, where was your first time on stage at?
My first time on stage was at a similar place. It was a bigger room, but it was like, and it was about that many people, but last night that room so small, it seemed pretty crowded, right? Seemed pretty full.
Right.
Any more than that, and it gets a little uncomfortable. But any more than that, they tend to pay attention. And they were still paying attention last night. So it was like that. It was at a Holiday Inn, Springfield, in Springfield, Ohio, and it was on like a Wednesday night. So it was pretty similar. And Dave Glarden set it up. And I did 10 minutes. Everybody got to do 10 minutes because he said 5 minutes wasn't enough for you to really catch your breath. And in a way, he's right. But I would argue that in your first couple times, 3 minutes is a lifetime. You know what I mean? 10 minutes is just not necessary. But I don't really remember anything that I said. I just remember that I got a couple good laughs, mostly just improvising, mostly just doing crowd work, which was like, I didn't know. I mean, like, I didn't know I was supposed to have stuff prepared. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I just thought I was supposed to go up there and be funny like I am at a party. And you know, like I said, I don't even remember. I've recorded it, but that got lost somewhere. I have no idea where it is. But what I'll say is this. She was way more prepared than I was my first time. She came up with notes. She was reading from the notes, and she even addressed the fact that I don't really need these, but I'm holding them, so I'm going to look at them. Like, almost like...
Yeah, it's a crutch.
Yeah, exactly. She acknowledged it. I mean, it was almost like, in a way, I was kind of like... The ideas were funny. She didn't have real solid punchlines or anything, but I could see through the weeds. I could see through the weeds. The thing was that she said she had acting experience, and to me... it showed. And so I didn't understand necessarily, like, are you doing this to become a better actor, or are you not acting anymore and you want to be a comic? Because I think you almost have to let go of the acting to truly to understand what's going on in stand-up. It's not really an act.
Right.
I mean, you are doing an act, but you're not acting the way actors act.
Yeah. I thought that she did good, and like, I would agree with everything said about, you know, and your first time on stage, unless you're an anomaly, you're not going to be, you know, that good. But that was also, like you were saying, a aggressive, you know, not an aggressive room, but it was a tough room. There was, you know.
Right.
So I thought that she did pretty damn good, and I would have hated my first time on stage to be in a room like that. That would almost have ran me off.
Yeah, no, and that's what I was mostly concerned with. I didn't catch her name or anything like that, and I got this new policy of not offering advice to comics, to new comics like that, especially after something like that. It's like, it's just too easy to never come back, that I don't, it's like, I'd rather see you come back on your own fruition before I start adding my 2 cents. I was happy to see the kid from the Funny Bone there not going up. And he said to me, he said, "Hey, don't be a stranger. Keep in touch." I said, "Yeah, you do the opposite." And but I was joking, but in a way I was being serious. And you know how I am. You know how I am. I talk tough, but I'm probably one of the nicest guys out there in comedy as far as like helping people get along. But but it's one of those things where it's like I come from a school of it's like a military school. You know what I mean? Almost like, even though I don't really come from a military school, I just like to do it. When I was a manager at a restaurant, I used to not talk to new trainees. Like if there was a new manager in training, I wouldn't talk to them. If they asked me a question directly, I would tell my assistant, and then my assistant would tell them. Until it got uncomfortable, right? Until it got to the point where, like, why the fuck won't you talk to me? This is not right. And I'd be like, you know, I'd just crack. But it was one of those situations where I always tried to break them in, because if you start off really nice, you really don't have anywhere to go. You know what I mean?
You spoil them, yeah.
So I try to keep it in gear. Sometimes it'd go on for a day or two. But the thing about being a manager is that typically they're confrontational people by nature, or willing to deal with a conflict. If you can't deal with a conflict, you aren't a manager.
Right.
Who else though? There was a couple other, I just yelled that. Who else last night though did well? Brock Schenck ripped it.
Brock, I think, had the set of the night. No, I would think there's no doubt about it. That was the set of the night.
And it's funny because it didn't get the reception that would have got in a real room. If he did that in a real room, dude, yep. I was even talking to him. I was like, "Yeah, you're cursed with the fact that you actually have a job you have to do or whatever. You're funny enough to be on the road. Why don't you, you know?" And he was like, "Yeah, well, I'm actually positioning myself right now where that's not going to be a problem anymore." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." And then he had a set like that. I was like, "Oh, shit."
It's the best set I've ever seen him have. I mean, I've seen rip it pretty good, but I've never seen in that.
I'll say this about Brock, and it's not really a knock. Maybe it is. But he does amazing things when the stakes are relatively low. I've never really seen him have a set like that when the stakes were high, but he was the first comedian in the Dayton community I ever met. When I walked into my improv class, he was talking, and in the room, it was like three other comics sitting around, or three other people sitting around, mostly comics. I don't even remember. Nathan Hall, Dave Brinkman, who else was there? Maybe somebody else that wasn't a comic was sitting there too. But so he was already, you know, like doing things. And the first time I saw him perform was weeks after I saw all the people in my improv class perform. And I was like, this guy's got something different. You know what I mean? Like he was already way ahead of everybody with his attitude. He's got a very aggressive, but his early jokes were like racist and, you know, he was like a Jesuit.
Right. Edgy. And, I think he's finding his voice a lot more.
Dude,
now.
He had, what I saw last night was he was using control. You know what I mean? Like he was timing it. He had emotion. He was hitting all the cylinders.
He had real high emotions there for a minute. And then when he needed to, he brought it down.
Yeah.
And then just to like reset it. And then so he could come hard again. And then, I thought it was killer. He called me today and asked if I could, because he has his first host week this week.
In Dayton?
In Dayton. Yeah. And so, well, he's on Thursday and Sunday, but he asked me if I thought that the set he did last night was too much for hosting. And I told him that I thought that it was too much for his first hosting gig.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're like, you would be cleaner, and once you are established in the club or whatever, then you can kind of get a little more leniency or whatever. But, and not that he was being so vulgar, but it was a big chunk on blowjob.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. That's essentially what it was. It was an emotional plea, but at the core of it, it's a dick joke. We had talked about before that, though, was that in a room like we were in last night, that's exactly what you have to do, right? But not at the Funny Bone. That's not what you have to do at the Funny Bone.
Right. And not that it wasn't distasteful the way that he was doing it, because a lot of blowjob jokes you hear, because it was a well-written joke. I loved it, dude. I was jealous of that joke. And he went a few different angles with it, and he had a message toward the end of it, and, you know, so it wasn't that it was too distasteful, but in the big picture of black and white, it's a dick joke.
Yeah. And we did the radio show yesterday, too, before we went to the open mic, and then we got there. Dale didn't even do time, did he?
He just brought the first guy up.
And that MC was pretty bad, man. That was pretty. I mean, not even like I'm not critiquing his jokes. I'm just critiquing his how not seriously he took the job of being a host.
It made me sick to my stomach, dude. And that shit he pulled when I was going up there, fucking pissed me off a pretty good bit. When I get up there and he's like, you don't need an introduction or whatever. Everybody, please put your hands together. And I'm like, dude, I know my timing is gonna be right when I get up. I was like, you're saying my name. I know I'll be right at the mic when. And then he just stops and stares at me and goes, what?
Yeah.
So I don't know if he forgot my name.
I think he did. Because when he said Mr. Snyder, it kind of was like he pulled that out.
Right.
But, you know, and I've been there before. I've been that horrible host before. And, so I'm not going to judge him too harshly. It was just, though, I've never taken, maybe I have. You know, maybe I have. I probably did have times in my hosting career, and, I still host on the reg, where I didn't take it as seriously as I should have. I know in my first couple weeks at the Funny, but my first couple weekends, I was, like, drinking. You know, I was like a drinker on the job. I think I was watching Mad Men, and I thought drinking at work was, like, the last vestige of being an American. But also, I think it was...
I don't think so.
Yeah, I do too. And I don't know, man. I just remember, like, I was working with Josh Sneed and Patrick Keane, and I could tell they were, like, not drinking at all.
But right.
They were, you know, they'd eat. I didn't eat. I just was drinking. And I think they were just kind of like, yeah, man. I think the... And I asked Josh Sneed on the last day. He never mentioned the drinking, but he did say that you shouldn't take anything on stage when you're hosting. There's just no need. He's like, unless they have something they want you to show off, like a piece of paper or something, like where you have to demonstrate, he's like, you should go up with nothing in your hands just because it's a short amount of time. And, you know, you're probably still new at this, so why burden yourself? And he was right, because I would take a drink up on stage and I would, like, drink it, and I wouldn't drink at the right times, and my timing was off. And
the drink sometimes throws that timing off.
It's the one thing I'd say Brandon Miller needs to probably abandon. I don't know if I've said that to him in person or not. I know he's part of one of his jokes is having a drink, but I think it takes away from his timing tremendously. And also, it's one of those. It's like if you take a piece of paper up with you, you're gonna look at it. If you set something on that stool, even my phone. I set my phone on the stool, and the timer's going, and it's recording or whatever. But I look at it only when I'm curious, how much time do I have left? Am I going into this bit now? Am I going into this bit on time? Like, that's really like halfway mark, and then when I'm getting ready to close. And that took a long time to get me there. But if I take notes on stage with me, even to this day, I may as well get on my knees and start licking the stool. That's how obvious it is I'm looking at the stool.
Right, yeah, I would agree. Good. I've got a couple more minutes left. I hate to cut it short.
He's a little bitch, is what you is. So who else? Gary Henry. He does okay. His confidence is remarkable.
Stellar. Yes.
But it's one of those things where it's like a comfort level. He's comfortable. You know what I mean? And I don't like anybody being that comfortable, not getting the result. You know what I mean? It's very safe.
But that, I see what you're saying, but I think that it's good to be able to do that. I worked for years to be able to get to that point. To where
I think, that's the thing, right? That's the thing. I think he's got a natural bulletproof attitude, which is what I think doesn't work with the clean comedy. You know what I mean? It's almost like, I don't know if I even noticed this until you just mentioned that, but I think it might be something where... I'm expecting something harder hitting. You know what I mean? Even if it is clean, more attitude or something, another dimension. because it's clear right. that he's not rattled by what other like you imagine. You can imagine some comics that only perform once a month doing that room. You know what I mean? They'd be shitting their pants.
Oh, I know one that would be able to talk himself out of going on stage.
Yeah, we're talking about the same guy.
He probably would just leave.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of good stuff, dude. I would say Brock. Was the only one that, I mean, Linda was all right. You know, Linda the fucking road dog.
Oh yeah, Linda got more than anybody got to that point. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Like
nobody got laughs like that till Linda went up, and I think Brock went right after her, right? Or soon after.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So.
And that's.
Escalated, you know what I mean? He was kind of standing on her shoulders to some degree, just because she was like the first one that had timing and rhythm and was like timing actually talking to that obnoxious dude in the crowd and
owned it. That was kind of a bizarre show. But you know what? That room's never been good.
No. I've seen a couple nights where it was decent, but it's never been like magic.
I think that it's good for an open mic because I think that bombing and struggling, having a rough set is healthy for young comics and for everybody. It's just bombing is a healthy part of stand-up comedy.
So here's my dilemma then. That's a great lead into this. We'll close on this because I didn't go up, right? And it wasn't because I didn't want to I guess that's exactly I didn't want to. What I didn't want to do was try this new material in a room where it was probably not going to work anyway and have my confidence be shook when
on
my new material. And so the alternative is, because I'm taking it to the stage tomorrow night, is just sandwich it in to stuff that already does work. You know what I mean? I can go in and out. Some of it's just add-ons to bits that I already do. So, and some of them I tried out this last week and I already know work, but there's a couple of bits where I'm really just trying to flip the act over before I go back to all these clubs. I've never done, I've maybe done two feature sets in Liberty where I'm going to be this weekend, and everything else has just been an MC set, but I've been there enough that, and they've got a pretty regular crowd now.
They've got a very fucking regular crowd.
That I gotta bring some new stuff, and I'm eager to do that, but I'd rather just squeeze it in the middle and let it cook the way I've been letting these things cook.
I think it's the way that you have to do it.
But I could have gone up last night, tried it, and let that not rattle me. Maybe it does get a laugh, and now my confidence is even through the roof. I don't know. I think there's like this sort of vigor. The first time you tell a joke, sometimes it's the best time you tell the joke.
Yeah. And then you gotta catch it again. That show last night, I don't give a fuck if you were reinventing the wheel with comedy. It wasn't going to get a laugh last night. It probably would have taken you from doing it to where like, maybe I should wait and, you know, work it out somewhere else before I take it to the Funny Bone stage or whatever. But I think that, you know, like you're saying, putting it in the middle of tried and true shit, you know, sandwiching it in there is the best way. And to kind of get them where they're at, you're not opening up with shit you haven't done. Because who knows, you might stutter on a word or two. And
sure. That's all it takes, dude. That's all it takes to have a joke go completely sideways is
One stutter.
Just one stutter.
And it doesn't matter. They ain't with you now.
Yeah. You lost me. What was you talking about? Let's go balance that checkbook. Where are my tater tots?
That kind of shit. And not even a stutter if you just kind of pause for a second too long and where they think you forgot. Oh, all the dumb shit like that.
And I had a lot of that this last weekend, man. Those long road trips and then. I just wasn't getting like the best sleep that I could have been if I had my own room, and I would just be kind of lost up there. So what I did today for the first time in a long time was I just changed up my daily routine. I drank a lot less coffee. I worked out early in the morning, and pushed all my recreational activities to the evening when I was done with everything that I felt like I needed to do. And I had a lot to do today. I went down to, went to was in Dayton today coaching soccer, and then drove back, and so it was like kind of a full day. But at the same time, like working out, you know how I told you I thought I fried my brain?
Right.
I think it was just not working out was what I was missing. I think it was the endorphins. I think activity and moving, because I was out playing soccer today feeling extra special. And I definitely hadn't felt that alive since UFC one.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm with you. That was. I got fried too, just coming off the end. I did the ass end of a long ass road trip and stuff
Oh
like
yeah,
that.
you came in super hot to that night. That was, and you probably didn't get, because of that night, you probably didn't truly start to recover for another 24 to 48 hours after you got home.
Yeah, and I don't think I've quit. I've been going pretty hard since
I've
then.
been, I've had, you know, I'm a civilian during the week, you know what I mean? But when I get on, when I put on my comedy shoes, I'm a different
Get the parts.
person. I'm a different person, and I'm trying to meld those two people into, I'm trying to grow the fuck up, I guess is what I'm saying. I don't know. But last night, dude, like sitting there watching that comedy, it was one of those things where I was like, I felt like I was at the club. You know what I mean? I felt like every other night of comedy, you know, I had a drink or two, you know, I'd eaten before I got there, so I wasn't like in bad shape or anything, but it was one of those things where I was like, you know, not drinking when I'm not doing comedy is not a problem. I don't even think about having a drink when I'm sitting at my house by myself.
Right.
But the minute I walk into a bar, it's the first thing I think about.
Yeah, when you're, yeah, when you got a gig going on.
Even if it, like even last night, like the first thing I did was walk around to the side of the bar where I thought I'd get the fastest service and got my drink. And I nursed it for a long time, but it was one of those things where I was thinking about it on my way home. Like, I don't think of myself as an alcoholic. I mean, I think of myself as an alcoholic, but not as a low functioning. I'm very high functioning. You know what I mean? Like, by not
Sure.
drinking, I just binge drink on the weekends. I'm like Bert, kind of, when I go home and I'm with my family, and drinking is just an afterthought. But there's been times when I didn't drink at all, and I just didn't notice I didn't drink. It wasn't like I was like, oh, I'm just gonna try really hard not to drink. So I'm just gonna like make that kind of my goal this weekend is to, if any drinking I do, to have it be after the show's over. And
Right.
that would be a huge
I think
improvement.
it's a good move.
That was
I
one of
mean, I
the
don't
New
quit.
Year's resolutions that I set for myself that I was the first New Year's resolution that I broke. Didn't even think about it. Just like, oh yeah, I'm having a drink. Staying in the same hotel, I'm having a drink.
Dude, I'm sorry, but I'm meeting somebody somewhere, and they just pulled in, and
Well, don't
I got
make it
two
sound no
spots.
more shady than that, brother. No, you're good. We got the time. So, good talking to you, and pump the cast.
Will do, buddy. I'll give you a shot tomorrow.
All right, later.
Later, pal.
Like someone else's dream, he says. Mm-hmm.